I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, political candidates believe they can lie because they can. The media lets them get away with it. Also,
Peter for first cat.
Bob Ferguson has a lot to say about his cat's Instagram account, but not much else of substance. Nicole will like that one. Also, local media is big mad about a big donation to Donald Trump. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A lot to get to today. I want to start with a follow-up to an exclusive report that we did on Thursday's show. We reported exclusively that State Senator Maka Dingra, who's running for Attorney General, she's a far-left Democrat, has been lying for several years about being a prosecutor for King County. Now, she was a prosecutor for King County for a long time, but the issue is she hasn't done that job in any full-time capacity since 2017, and she worked there part-time in 2021, but not since then. Yet, here's what she said on the video voter guide for her race for Attorney General.
Hi, I am Maka Dingra, Deputy Majority Leader of the Washington State Senate, Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with King County, and I'm running to be your next Attorney General.
Yeah, sounds a lot like she's saying she's a current senior deputy prosecuting attorney in King County, which she is not. And again, we shared with you that the King County Prosecutor's Office gave us her employment dates. She was full-time 2000 to 2017. She came back on a temp basis for just a couple months in 2019 and a couple months in 2021. But since then, she has not been employed. Now, a couple things to catch you up on. If you watch Sunday's show with subscribers, you know a little bit of this, but I want to inform the rest of you. So after our story aired on Thursday, the King County Prosecutor's Office followed up with her. Because we had asked them, look, you know, is it concerning to you that she's misrepresenting herself as a current prosecutor? I mean, she's making it sound like, because she's making excuses for a soft on crime policies. Oh, I don't love criminals. I'm a prosecutor. That's why she's saying it, right? So I said, does it concern you that she's misrepresenting herself as like a prosecutor who's still in the courtroom? So they sent her an email. It reads, hi, Maka. This is from the HR department with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. I hope you're doing well. Came to our attention through a news report that you're stating you are a current senior deputy prosecuting attorney with the King County Prosecutor's Office rather than a former senior deputy. Will you please correct this in your campaign materials? Feel free to contact me if you have any questions. So that went to her on Thursday, again, shortly after our story ran, and she has not corrected anything. She has not responded to our request for comment. She has not corrected anything, and why would she? No other media touched the story. There was, I think Ari Hoffman maybe did it, but no mainstream old media outlets touched the story. You have a candidate to be the next attorney general who is out there in campaign material telling voters in the voter guide that she's prosecuting cases, that she's a prosecutor. Do we not have any standards at all for people who run for office? Are blatant lies not enough anymore? And that's why I say, it's like, why would she not, right? Why would you not run for office and lie about your military service or lie about your employment or do this or that? Mainstream media doesn't care. They care a little more if you're a Republican. Care a lot less if you're a Democrat. Because you could get away with just about anything. It's insane to me. 4 days. 4 days she's caught explicitly lying about her credentials and not a peep. Not a peep from the mainstream media, not a peep from the Democratic Party, because we have no standards anymore. The media is the institution that is there to hold people accountable. And when the media is not doing that, then why not cheat, lie, deceive to get ahead? Hell, it's worked for them this long. But we're not going to drop it. We're going to follow back up with the prosecutor's office today. We're going to follow back up with Maka Dingra's campaign. We're going to ask the Washington State Democratic Party whether they have an issue with her misrepresenting her record. And above just the lie, as someone who's going to be, wants to be the attorney general, the chief law enforcer. I remember when honesty and integrity used to mean something when you're in a job like that, when you're a police officer or a prosecutor or an attorney general. Now apparently it just means Jack. So not only is that obviously an issue where you're deeply dishonest and you want to enforce the laws of Washington State and you want to put your, you want to hold everyone else accountable for doing things that are wrong, but not you. You can't be held accountable. But again, remember why this bothered me so much. This is someone who chairs the Law and Justice Committee. This is someone who has been directly responsible over the last 3 years for pushing policies that have eroded public safety. And she uses her job as a prosecutor as a get-out-of-jail-free card when people criticize her for being too pro-criminal. Well, as a prosecutor, no, she doesn't get to hide in that anymore. She hasn't been a prosecutor during this crime wave, during this crime crisis. She hasn't been a prosecutor during the period of time where the policies she pushed, like the no police pursuit policy, have impacted public safety in a major way. Maybe if she were still a prosecutor, she would have seen that more clearly, and she wouldn't continue to hide behind that bad policy. So, 4 days and counting, still no correction or acknowledgement from Monica Dingra or the Democratic Party that she is blatantly lying about her credentials as a prosecutor. Good for the prosecutor's office, though, for seeing what they asked me, can you send us links? I sent them links of what I was referring to the video voter guide, to her bio, both on the state website and her campaign website, to every single one of her social media pages, to comments that she's made, to the debate where she was introduced as a senior deputy prosecuting attorney. So they got all that. They immediately emailed her and said, take it down. You have to update the record. And she hasn't done it. That's someone who's really fit to be the attorney general. But honestly, I'm more mad at the media. Politicians will do what politicians do. People seeking power will do what people seeking power do. They'll lie, they'll deceive, they'll do whatever they can, they'll manipulate and gaslight. It's the media used to be an entity that could be counted on to hold them accountable. But not so much anymore. So I'm more mad at the media than I really am at Monica Dingra. All right, speaking of the election, the Washington State Democratic Party had its convention over the weekend. You'll recall when the Republican Party had its convention, it was quite the ordeal. And I'll say the Democratic convention was quite the ordeal, too. It was interesting, though, because they opted to script out any dissent. What do I mean by that? So in high-profile races where they have more than one Democrat running, like Commissioner of Public Lands, they didn't allow any of those candidates to speak. So they didn't want it to look like there was any sort of dissent or breakdown or disagreement in the ranks. Now, I tend to kind of prefer, as disastrous as the Republican convention was, and I have a lot of issues with the Republican Party, I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow, at least they let people, like, hash out their differences, right? And so they didn't let, if there was any sort of dissent on candidates, Democratic candidates, they didn't let any of those Democratic candidates speak. Except if you're Bob Ferguson. Remember? Because Bobby Ferguson was given an opportunity to buy his endorsement from the state Democratic Party for $1 million so he could shut out Mark Mullett, who didn't have $1 million to give them. So Bob Ferguson got to speak at the convention. Mark Mullett was not allowed to speak at the convention. He was asked him, I said, were you even invited? Were you disinvited? He said, I was allowed to attend. I could have attended, but he was out campaigning. But I wasn't allowed to speak. So interesting. So that just proves that Bob Ferguson bought their endorsement for $1 million. And Mark Mullett is just chopped liver. Anyway, let's play some clips, shall we? Why not? If you missed, I'm sure all of you watched Bob Ferguson's speech. I'm sure you were glued to TVW for the entirety of the Democratic convention. But in case you weren't, here's Bob Ferguson after he took the stage.
Are you ready to make sure we elect Democrats up and down the ballot this year? And will you help me permanently send to political retirement Dave Reichert in November?
I have to laugh at that one because Dave Reichert was in retirement. But Bob Ferguson is so terrifying, and the prospect of him becoming governor was so terrifying that Dave Reichert is like, well, I guess I'll leave my comfy retirement in Chelan and run for governor to save the state from this whack job. So yeah, he would much rather be in retirement. But the prospect of you running our state is so bad for the future of our state that he had to come out of retirement to do it, which is saying a lot. All right, so Bob went on to say he was just given 3 minutes to speak, okay? So he wasn't like a featured speaker. Mark Mullett couldn't speak. He was given only 3 minutes to speak, so he obviously focused those 3 minutes on the critical issues facing the state of Washington.
Now, look, I've got 3 minutes. I'm going to make three quick points. Number one, on behalf of my 16-year-old twins who are not old enough to vote, but they are old enough to understand social media in a way their father does not, Some of you know they've created an Instagram page for the campaign. We have a cat named Peter. Why am I telling you this? Peter has his own following now. The Instagram page they have created for the campaign is called Peter for First Cat. They want Peter to be the first cat of Washington. So if you go to Instagram and you search Peter for First Cat, you will find him. And you will make them very happy if you follow Peter for First Cat. I literally think he's got more followers than me at this point, Shasti. He's a very popular cat, so check him out.
No thanks. Okay, I did go check out the cat. The cat's pretty cute. I'm not going to blame the cat for his owner. But yeah, really critical stuff. I mean, for the guy who wants to be the next governor, he's trying to be relatable. My kids, they made an Instagram account for our cat. And I was like, okay, I went to the account. The cat's cute, so I'll give him that. But I'm still not following, out of principle, I'm not following the cat's Instagram account. All right, let's see. Let's get to, I cannot believe he hearkened back to this. So Bob Ferguson, this clip was making the rounds on social media. He acknowledged how close the race is going to be. Although he brought up an example that I'm not sure is the best example to raise. Here it is.
I want to communicate to all of you how close this election for governor is going to be. Now, look, I know it's easy to think, hey, Washington's a blue state, right? But if you look at the last two campaigns for governor in Washington state, when there was no incumbent on the ballot running, so that's Chris Gregoire running and Jay Inslee running, the last two times, the total margin of victory for both Chris Gregoire and Jay Inslee combined 3 percentage points. Chris Gregoire won her election against a then-unknown Dino Rossi, by 133 votes. In other words, four times the people, right, are in this room than decided that election. Jay Inslee won a hard-fought campaign against Rob McKenna with 51.5% of the vote. This campaign will be close.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Dino Rossi campaign with Chris Gregoire, the one that, like, had to be counted and recounted and recounted, and then all of a sudden they found the votes. Not sure that's the example that you give. I don't know if that'll motivate Republicans or not, though, to think that it'll be 133 votes. I don't know where he's getting that, if he thinks it's just going to be as close as the 2004 race. I mean, it's certainly going to be close. I think a lot of it's going to come down to, I mean, I'm glad he recognizes that, but there's also strategy there, right? Like, he wants to make sure that the money keeps coming in, even though he's already got millions and millions of dollars in his campaign fund. But, you know, I'm frustrated over the weekend. I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow, but there are Semi-Byrd supporters who are on social media saying that they will not vote for Dave Reichert if he beats Semi in the primary. I'm like, you guys are so, I'm sorry. I don't like to name call. That's so dumb. I really hope that you're not being sincere, because we are talking about like a percentage point. So anyway, we shall see. There was also some happenings at the state Democratic Party convention around. They only gave Bob 3 minutes. They gave the Hamas supporters a lot more than 3 minutes. We're going to get to that, but we'll save it for national news. All right. I wanted to play you guys a little clip from Sundays with Subscribers this week. So on the show, really the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about this controversy in Newcastle, Washington, where four of the three council members voted that they were not going to raise the pride flag over City Hall. They weren't going to do it. Then, of course, there was backlash. Like, the mob got angry. One of the council members flips. They ended up raising the pride flag. But the mayor of Newcastle has just been attacked over his comments on this. Basically, what he said in a nutshell is the American flag is what unifies us. A pride flag represents some people. We don't need to fly a different flag over City Hall. We have one flag, despite, you know, a checkered history of our country. And he brought up, you know, race relations and slavery. The flag is what unites all of us. So anyway, he said that. And then I had mentioned the Seattle Times article that came out about him. The headline, on eve of Juneteenth, Newcastle mayor disparaged reparations and pride. To which I said, I think the Seattle Times owes him an apology because, you know, Mayor Robert Clark never disparaged pride. In fact, he said, everyone in the pride community is welcome in our city. You're welcome. You can have your parade. You can do whatever you want. They had a protest and a march. He's like, no big deal. But that doesn't mean that I support the pride flag being raised above City Hall. And his point about reparations, if they actually had listened to him, was, look, you know, our country has a spotty past, but at some point we need to move forward. We need to heal. We need to realize we're not the country where we had slavery or Jim Crow laws or whatever it is. So anyway, yeah, that's the headline the Seattle Times came away with. On eve of Juneteenth, Newcastle mayor disparaged reparations and pride. It's just insane to me. So anyway, the Newcastle mayor, Robert Clark, joined us on Sundays with Subscribers to try to set the record straight about his comments. So can you, for people who might have read a headline that makes them feel like you are like a homophobe, can you explain the point you were trying to make about the pride flag versus the American flag?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, you know, and I've said it in my statements, and I encourage people to listen to the two full recordings and not just read the Seattle Times. And I, as a limited government guy, that means promoting the First Amendment to the fullest extent. So that First Amendment gives you the right to assemble, to speak freely in religion. We all know that. But a true limited government would stay out of the way of people's lives, and they can go and celebrate and do whatever is important to them. If there's a celebration, if there's a memorial, if there's a, you know, activity, you know, nobody in Newcastle is going to stand in their way.
Yeah.
Right. And that includes pride. So if you are really passionate about, you know, pride, if that's important to you, please celebrate. And I've said that over and over. And that's why I've said we welcome everybody. And I don't believe that we should then tell the other, you know, we shouldn't say as a government, well, okay, it's Pride Month, you have to support and celebrate Pride. If that's important, we're certainly going to let you do that. We're not going to bother you for whatever reason. And I don't ask, it's none of my business, but people tell me we don't want to see the Pride flag flying at the City Hall. So by putting the Pride flag up on a government flagpole, we're saying, in my opinion, of course, is that this is what the government believes, and you should all believe it too. So people look to the government and they take cues from the government. So, you know, rightly or wrongly, that's not something that we should be telling. It goes back to what I said. We shouldn't tell, say, or what to do. So the U.S. flag, you know, is the symbol of America. Now, I've been getting a lot of flack because, you know, people say to me, well, you don't understand that, you know, it doesn't mean the same thing to me, and my, you know, ancestors did this, and in the past this happened. I acknowledge all of that, right? Yeah. I'm a history buff guy. I get it. I totally get it. And I'm not making light of anybody's past experiences. They tried to say that in the Seattle Times, mm-hmm. where you don't understand and you're just, you know, sweep it under the rug. That's baloney, right? I want to refute that totally. The headline and all that. The American flag, you know, with its past imperfections, is the symbol that we all can identify with and we should be able to unite under. And, you know, history is full of, you know, bumps and bruises, but we learn from those things and we go forward and we get better collectively.
Yeah, you can watch that full interview by becoming a subscriber on DividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. I was grateful to have an opportunity to chat with him at depth about it because, you know, again, I just look back at that Seattle Times headline. It's a news article headline, and it is just based on opinion. On eve of Juneteenth, New Council Mayor disparaged reparations and pride. It's all about vilifying him for saying what he said there, which is, I fail to see the controversy in it. He did say, I had asked him about, you know, the way he came across when one of the council members was the deputy mayor. She's the one who flipped her vote to allow for the pride flag to go up. And after that vote, he said, she's going to go out and raise the pride flag personally. And I'm like, did you ask her before you did that? He's like, no. And he said he was frustrated and stuff. But we talked at length about it. Really nice guy. He's not a homophobe. He's not a racist. And shame on the media for perpetuating the attacks against him by saying so. So we appreciate the mayor coming on. Again, you can watch that full interview by becoming a subscriber, UndividedPod.com. Coming up next, there's an effort to get leaders across the state of Washington to sign a pledge to institute real solutions to homelessness. Dow Constantine, not your fake solutions to homelessness. We'll talk about it. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, like our friends Bryce and Carlo, who are fans of the Undivided podcast, I highly suggest reaching out to Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. You know, there are a lot of real estate agents in the area, but Wes has been doing this for a long time. His marketing is second to none. Carlo says that Wes saw the potential in their home, even with the market the way it is, the second he walked in.
Just very detail oriented and never put down our property, because you could hear I-90 from our property and it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was.
Yeah, she was joking that another real estate agent, because they, you know, they did what they were supposed to. I think you reach out to a few and they were comparing and contrasting. One said, oh, you need a water feature on your deck because it was by I-90. She's like, I'm not putting a water feature on our deck to sell the home. Ridiculous. Anyway, reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can start by using the home value calculator right there on their website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, leaders from across the state of Washington are signing on to a pledge to institute real solutions to deal with the homelessness crisis, which, of course, we know is caused by substance abuse and mental illness. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And Future 42 is behind the pledge that we're talking about. So they put together, and that's why I love Future 42. It's not about political party, and I love our partnership. It's not about political party, Democrat versus Republican. You know how I feel about the two parties. It's about good policy. Who has good policy? I don't care if it comes from a Democrat or it comes from a Republican, but anyone who's willing to actually acknowledge the root cause of one of the biggest crises we face and pledge to push for real solutions is welcome in this conversation. So I'll give you a little bit about the pledge, but then I'm going to let Nate Nearing, who's the Future 42 Snohomish County Director, talk us through it a little bit more. But a couple of the things that it does, and again it's just a promise from elected leaders. It says, requiring individuals who receive taxpayer-subsidized supportive housing while experiencing substance use disorders actively participate in drug treatment programs with the goal of sobriety. Imagine that. That seems like a pretty reasonable thing to say, yeah, I support. If you're going to put someone in taxpayer-funded tiny house or whatever it is, and they've got a substance abuse issue, it's contingent on them going to treatment so that they actually better their circumstances. Defunding existing harm reduction programs, investing in the creation of additional mental health treatment beds, et cetera, et cetera. So again, Nate Nearing, who heads the Snohomish County efforts for Future 42, joined us to talk about this pledge and why he thinks it goes beyond just an empty signature to follow a promise that you might make. Nate Nearing, welcome to Undivided.
Hey, Brandy, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
It's been a while. I'm sorry for that. You know, you're just so busy. You're changing the
world. Yeah, we both are, but it's always fun to be on. I appreciate you bringing me on.
Thank you. So you're here in your capacity with Future 42. Specifically, what are you doing with our friends at F42?
Yeah, so I'm directing the Snohomish project for Future 42. So I'm working on Snohomish County related items and also helping out with some statewide messaging, which we'll talk a little bit more about.
Yeah, so let's talk about homelessness. We have last week on the show talked quite a bit about something that was said down in King County, the King County executive saying that homelessness is not driven by drug abuse or mental illness, that it is a failure of the housing market. What do you think is driving our homeless crisis?
Yeah, I saw the statement from the King County executive and was really surprised to hear somebody actually say that. I mean, I think it's pure fiction, you know, the idea that mental illness and drug addiction don't have a role to play. Anybody who's gone out onto the streets and talked with individuals who are struggling with addiction can understand very clearly that drug addiction and mental illness are a primary cause for homelessness. And obviously there are cases where, you know, you have other causes, but I think the vast majority of cases, you've got some sort of interplay between mental illness and addiction. And so the question then is, how do we address this, right? We have the housing first model, which is typically proposed in progressive areas of, you know, let's just get people who are homeless off the street and into shelter. And I don't think that's working. I think we see in Seattle and throughout the Puget Sound region and frankly throughout the country that this is failing in addressing the core needs, which again are our treatment and the need to overcome an addiction.
Yeah, one of the last times we had you on, you know, something that you were pushing for is, okay, if we're going to put people into, and correct me if I'm mischaracterizing it because it's been a while, but, you know, yes, we want people off the streets, right? We want people, we'd rather have them living in some kind of shelter than in a tent or in a park or whatever it is, but there have to be some sort of stipulations for that. You know, we have to make sure that they're actively participating in drug treatment, for instance. Have you seen any traction toward a desire to do that?
Well, it's interesting. I actually do think that there's been a bit of a momentum shift, and maybe not as much in King County, given the statements which we recently heard. But in Snohomish County and in other places throughout the state, I think we have seen a bit of a mindset shift in that direction of people starting to realize, hey, maybe housing first might work for folks who are, you know, victims of domestic violence or are down on their luck due to financial insecurity. But when somebody has a severe fentanyl addiction, maybe it's not a great idea to give them a pair of keys to a hotel room or to their own unit where they're going to go in and continue to use and potentially overdose or contaminate the taxpayer-funded unit or whatnot. And so people are starting to realize that, whether it's elected officials, I've talked to several prominent nonprofits throughout the region who are all saying, look, Housing First is not working when we're looking at this fentanyl issue. We need to try something else.
Yeah, or at least not Housing First and then no strings attached, you know, like you right. said. I mean, that just right. doesn't, it defies common sense. It really does. And so it's hard to see some people continue to push that narrative. So tell me about the pledge that you are asking or encouraging other elected leaders to sign.
So at Future 42, one of the things we've been working on are what are some alternatives we can put forward? Because it's it's one thing to say, well, we reject Housing First and we reject harm reduction and the failed policies that progressives typically put forward. But I think the next question is, well, what do you want to do instead? What is the solution then? And so what we've worked on through this Real Solutions to Homelessness pledge are seven tangible items that local elected officials throughout the state can sign on to and can commit to that will move things forward in a positive direction. And so these are things from, making sure we're treatment first, accountability through things like mandatory minimum sentencing, taking a look at involuntary commitment through Ricky's Law, which was made available through the state legislature on a bipartisan basis. And so there are lots of policies that can be done at the local level, and there are things we can do as an alternative to Housing First and harm reduction.
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, pledges are just like, it's like, oh, you're going to sign this and then nothing really happens. So I guess what's the intent there? Just to show that there is support for a more common sense approach, or what realistically is it going to accomplish?
Yeah, I think the intent is twofold. First of all, it's to show that there are quite a few elected officials throughout the state who are interested in alternative solutions. We had early on over 50 local elected officials sign on to this pledge, which is significant for a pledge like this. And that number is continuing to grow. But I think the next step, and maybe the more tangible step, is those elected officials who say, yes, we agree with these sorts of policies. Yes, we do want to shift from Housing First and harm reduction. They now have examples of policies they can implement and jurisdictions which have successfully implemented them, and language for ordinances and whatnot that they can take to their jurisdiction and introduce at a city council or a county council meeting for consideration so that the policy can be adopted in their local jurisdiction.
Yeah, I love that. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here. Like, no real leader should need credit for anything. It's like, somebody already did it. It's working. Let's right. do it here. Take the ideas and let's do what works. So I really love that.
Yeah. I'm all for stealing good ideas. We just don't want to take any bad ideas, right?
True. Yes. Leave the bad ideas. And on that end, I want to end here, because I guess I'm personally baffled why we're still in this place. Like, we were talking on the show, you know, we read part of a lawsuit that King County filed against Big Pharma back in 2018. And there were a lot of jurisdictions that sued Big Pharma for the opioid crisis, you know, the city of Everett, for instance, the state at large, the city of Seattle. And they said in no uncertain terms in those lawsuits, our homeless crisis is being driven by drug abuse. So that was just 6 years ago. And now here we are with the most populated county in the state, the executive saying this is a result of housing failure. And so it's just such whiplash for me. But why do you think, given what, you know to be true, what I know to be true, what people on the street say to be true, why do you think we still have leaders who are so stuck on this housing first model?
No, I think it's a great question. And it's very disappointing to see. I don't think we're ever going to make progress and find solutions on this issue if we're not going to acknowledge the significant role that drug addiction and mental illness plays and as root causes of homelessness. As for the reasoning, why do elected officials do this? I mean, one thought is, you know, it's really easy if you say, well, the homelessness crisis is just a result of not having enough housing or shelter capacity. Well, then we can raise taxes and just put more money toward housing and wipe our hands clean and call it good. We've done what we need to. In reality, tackling drug addiction and tackling mental illness are much more complicated issues. They're very difficult. It's not a matter of let's just throw funding this way and we don't have to worry about it anymore. I mean, these are going to take years and decades to solve, and it's hard work. And frankly, I think it's the job of elected officials, if they're truly wanting to serve their constituents, to roll up their sleeves and get to work on it rather than ignoring the problem or pretending like it doesn't exist, which unfortunately we're starting to see more of, as you pointed out.
Yeah. So if there are any elected leaders watching who would like to sign on to that pledge, how can they do it?
They can go to future42.org. And the pledge is on there, so you can fill it out online, or you can always reach out to me by email as well. That's nate@p42.com.
All right, Nate, we appreciate it. Thank you for being a card-carrying member of Team Sanity.
Thanks, Brandy. Take care.
Yeah, it's good to know that there are some leaders who recognize that what we've been doing isn't working and that you do have to focus on the drug issue and the mental health issue, especially after last week when we had Dow Constantine be like, it's a housing issue, which is just absurd. It's just absurd. I don't understand it. I don't know if that's because that's where they can get the most buy-in to raising taxes to build more affordable housing, if it's about money. I don't know what it's about. I do know that it's not going to work. And so I think it's a start to get almost a running list of elected leaders who are willing to go in a different direction and then gain some momentum that way. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right. We have expressed, I have expressed my deep frustration with the fact that Bob Ferguson continues to get a free pass from the local media. He continues to get a free pass from the local media on calling or having a phone call with the Secretary of State, encouraging him to break the law to advantage his gubernatorial campaign. If he had been a Republican candidate, Democrats would be screaming election interference. It would still be in the headlines. It would have tanked his campaign. But because he's a Democrat, not only is it not tanking his campaign, the media barely talked about it. There are some outlets who have never covered it at all. Yet, when a rich guy wants to donate $1 million to help President Donald Trump's reelection campaign, oh, stop the presses. All right, so a rich guy in Bellevue decided to donate $1 million to a Trump super PAC. And of course, gosh, if you help Orange Man bad, especially after those felony convictions, we've got to make that front page news. This from Cairo 7. Bellevue man donates $1 million to Trump super PAC. It says, according to new Federal Election Commission filings, wealth manager Walter Schleffer made the donation to Make America Great Again LLC on May 31st. Okay, like just letting us know what's happening. That's not so bad. But listen to Seattle Times. The Seattle Times, who's writing your headlines? Who is writing your headlines? The bias that drips from their headlines in particular is insane. Get this. Bellevue man gives $1 million to Trump PAC after felony convictions. So that's, they're acting like it's inherently a horrible thing. Like no one gets to support Donald Trump. And we can spin it as a bad thing if you give him money. Meanwhile, the Seattle Times, Cairo 7, other news outlets have barely touched. First of all, I get it. A local guy gave to it. But you've barely touched some of the most consequential political, local political stories. Barely touched them. But it's like, oh, rich guy gave $1 million to Orange Man bad. Headline. It's crazy to me. I just don't understand how, first of all, the Seattle Times readership, it must be suffering. It has to be suffering, right? I know there are a lot of liberals in the state. I know it's a blue state. I know a lot of people don't like Donald Trump. I'm not particularly fond about him either. Had a little Joe Biden moment there. But still, do you see that though? Can you pull back up that Seattle Times headline? Bellevue man gives $1 million to Trump PAC after felony convictions. Like, how dare he do that? The felony convictions. It's similar to how they treated Dave Reichert with, oh, he might vote for Donald Trump. And it's automatically a negative headline. Mm-hmm. He might vote for Donald Trump. Let's do a whole story on it. Let's do a whole interview about it. I'm not saying you can't question candidates and say, hey, you know, Donald Trump has been convicted on 34 felonies. Why are you considering supporting him? Why are you giving him money? I don't really have an issue with that line as long as you're balancing it out and talking about, I don't know, Bob Ferguson, ethics investigation, Bar Association saying they're not going to investigate him despite the fact that he told the Secretary of State, bullshit, you can push the envelope in breaking election law. There's no balance there. There's no consistency there. And the Times headline here is very similar to that Times headline on the Newcastle mayor, where it's an opinion. It's mm-hmm. clearly dripping with bias. It's telling you that you ought to be upset or outraged that someone would give Donald Trump's PAC $1 million after he was convicted of 34 felonies. It's telling you that you ought to think that the mayor of Newcastle is a homophobe and a racist. That's not what news headlines are supposed to be in. It's not an opinion article. It's a news article. So it's just wild. It still continues to amaze me that there are news outlets in this city that have not picked up on the Bob Ferguson election interference thing. Because I guarantee I could find articles in those same news outlets when they talk about Donald Trump's call to the Georgia elections officials. I guarantee I could find news articles about that. But Bob Ferguson, no, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He was just really upset. It wasn't a big deal. One news outlet that I actually kind of like said he was just giving advice. He was giving like legal advice to the.
He just gave advice to the Secretary of State.
It's not his job as the Attorney General to give the Secretary of State legal advice when it comes to how to benefit his campaign for governor. It's really freaking unbelievable.
Bad legal advice if your advice is to break the law.
You probably shouldn't be a lawyer anymore if you're giving advice to break the law. Mm-hmm. Really not sound legal advice. It just blows my mind. I mean, it really does. I'm curious.
And they didn't cover most of the articles that I found that did cover it were only after the ethics complaint was filed, right? So they filed, so that was the report. It wasn't what was right in front of them when he was doing a press conference asking him to break the law.
Yeah, there was maybe a couple, and I think there was one, you know, conservative certainly jumped onto it, but we didn't need an ethics complaint to tell us that he was asking the Secretary of State to break election law for him. You really think if that were a Republican candidate, it would not be election interference, election integrity? Of course it would. But no, it can't do that. But let's spend some time talking about a rich guy who wants to donate $1 million of his own money to help Trump get reelected. You guys, the media is failing us. It's failing us. And it's really, really insane. You can't even gauge. I can't even gauge how much that helps or hurts candidates. I mean, with the Seattle Times, the Seattle Times is an important newspaper in Washington State to have on your side. It really is. As much as I hate that that's true, when you look at the campaign for governor, for instance, when you have, I think there's a lot of old school liberals that read the Seattle Times. And so, and old school liberals, I think, really are kind of independents and more Republican than they might let on. They're certainly not in line with these progressive wackos. But if you read the Seattle Times, you get the newspaper delivered to your door, and it's all like, oh, Dave Reichert said this. Dave Reichert said this. Dave Reichert was caught on video saying this. And then they completely ignore all the Bob Ferguson scandals. Of course, how do you think people are going to vote? It's insane stuff. Okay, we're going to get to some national news. A lot of it on the Israel Hamas front. And Jamal Bowman, he needs to stick to pulling fire alarms because him on the campaign trail is rough. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We all need insurance, so why not have an insurance broker do the work for you for free to make sure you're getting the insurance you need at the price that you deserve? Our friend Ben Bailey and his wife Leslie took the First Mark Challenge, ended up saving $1,500 a year.
You know, it's good to, just like you would go in for an annual physical with your primary care physician. You know, you may not have anything wrong, but it's good just to kind of have that, you know, annual check-in. And I think that's what First Mark, you know, the service and the value that they really provide is it helps. It helps you have an understanding of your coverage.
Yeah. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Again, it's free to take the First Mark Challenge. You just spend a little bit of time going over your current insurance with them, talking about your insurance needs. They go out for free, shop the market for you. You never pay First Mark a dime for their services. And that is really one of the best parts. All right. Moving on to some national news. I don't know if you guys saw what happened in LA last night, but honestly, it was pretty horrifying. So there was some clashes outside an LA synagogue between these pro-Palestine protesters, although some of them, I think, definitely cross over into pro-Hamas, and this is a predominantly Jewish community in LA, and there were some horrifying videos. I'll play one of them in just a moment, but there were videos of people in these, Hamas, what do you call them, kafirs, like walking around Jewish neighborhoods almost looking like they were looking for Jewish people. It was absolutely horrifying. I mean, so bad that Gavin Newsom actually said something about it. You know, it's got to be bad if Gavin Newsom is saying something about it. Then there's a video in particular that's been making the rounds on social media that reportedly shows a Jewish woman. It's going to be hard to see her, but a Jewish woman on the ground being attacked by protesters as you hear her cry out for help. Here's the video. Yeah, that's America in 2024 outside a synagogue in one of the most progressive places on earth, that an area where they say they care about people, they welcome differences and all of this, unless you're Jewish, I guess. What other reason would there be? And you think about, again, think about the places that some of these protests have happened. This was just about seeking out Jewish people. This was about, and you say you're not anti-Semitic, but this was about seeking out Jewish people in a Jewish neighborhood. There were some of these pro-Hamas protesters spraying bear spray at people. They sprayed bear spray at a journalist, and I immediately had flashbacks to the riot. Like, oh my gosh, So when it happens, if you've ever been sprayed, I haven't been sprayed with bear spray, but I've been sprayed with other things at protests, inadvertently by the police, right? You can't see. You can't open your eyes, right? So I saw this video of this journalist, this independent journalist, and there was a rabbi who recognized in that moment that like his camera's slung, he's screaming, he can't see anything, but he has a, what do you call it? What do you call the little cameras you strapped? GoPro. He's got a GoPro on and it's rolling. And this rabbi just grabs him by the shoulders and says, I'm gonna lead you out of here. Because imagine that, being blind essentially in a melee, having just been sprayed straight in the face by bear spray, by this Hamas sympathizer. You don't know who's your friend, who's your enemy, who's gonna help you, who's gonna hurt you. He didn't know, because he couldn't see that it was a rabbi who was helping him, grabbing him by the shoulders, leading him out, helping him to get water out of his eyes. I mean, just a horrifying situation. Again, so bad that even Gavin Newsom's like, yeah, I'm going to have to say something about it because they're out hunting Jews in our neighborhoods. And what is the Washington State Democratic Party doing while that's happening down in Los Angeles? What do you think? Oh, at their convention, they're talking about a ceasefire, you know, vilifying the Jewish state. And look, I understand that there's a difference between vilifying Netanyahu and vilifying Jewish people, but a lot of this crosses over. A lot of this conversation crosses over. You know how they only gave Bob Ferguson 3 minutes to speak? Well, they gave a hell of a lot more than 3 minutes to people who want a ceasefire and who are calling on Israel to agree to a ceasefire. Never any mention of Hamas. Never any mention of whether Hamas will honor a ceasefire, about getting Hamas to, I don't know, return hostages and then agree to a ceasefire. Never any conversations about that. Only conversations about what's happening to people in Gaza, not about what happened on October 7th. So here's a little bit of a clip of some Democratic Party members speaking at the convention.
I'm a proud Palestinian American, and I'm turning to the Democratic Party today for support. I am terrified for my safety and my communities and my people's safety. The three resolutions that we will be voting on related to Gaza are about advocating for human rights. I want to know if the Washington State Democratic Party will stand by its stated values and stand up for the Palestinian people who have witnessed some of the most horrific violence inflicted on them in the last 8 months.
I urge you today, as both a Democrat and a Jew, to support all three ceasefire resolutions. As a Democrat, it is clear that the majority of us, 77%, believe President Biden should demand a permanent ceasefire from Netanyahu's government.
Our elected leaders hold immense diplomatic power to prevent the further loss of Israeli and Palestinian lives. We have to call on our congressional delegation to sign on the ceasefire now, H.R. 76 resolution, co-sponsored by our Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal.
Yeah, so they ended up passing all three of these resolutions, including a call for an immediate ceasefire and a call to halt U.S. military aid to Israel. And that's what they were focused on to close out the state Democratic Party convention. What the hell does the state Democratic Party convention have to do with it? And I know you're looking at the national party platform and all of these things. You don't think we got more important things happening in the state of Washington? I wish you could spend just as much time talking about, I don't know, the crime crisis that has worsened, how working class people are poor, or rising cases of anti-Semitism. I will give it to a few people in the audience who stood up in front of that group and said that they did not support these resolutions and talked about the hate that has been anti-Semitism that has been proliferating in our communities, but they were vastly outnumbered because all of these resolutions passed easily. So here you've got this, you know, Jews being hunted on the streets of LA, right? You know, people getting beaten, hit with pepper spray. At the same time, you've got the Washington State Democratic Party fully engaged in cheerleading for Hamas. And then over in New York City, oh my God, have you seen these clips? What? There's so much here to unpack. I'm going to play a couple of them. So Jamal Bowman, you know, the old, I don't want us to have to vote on this thing, so I'm going to go pull the fire alarm to get the building evacuated. That Congressman Jamal Bowman. So he's in a primary contest. There's a Democrat, the Westchester County Executive, George Latimer, a Democrat who's a little bit more centrist. He's trying to unseat Rep. Jamal Bowman. Well, I can't have that. AOC had to come to Jamal Bowman's aid. They held this rally. I think it was in the Bronx. What do we want to play first? The clip of Bowman and AOC? They put out a little social media video. Here it is.
Ceasefire now, y'all. That's what we're doing. Ceasefire now. Let's get it popping. The polls are open today. The polls are open tomorrow. Make sure you get out to vote. Election day is Tuesday. Let's go. We need record turnout all across the district, especially in Yonkers, Mount Vernon, New Rochelle, Co-op City, and Edenwall. Let's get it popping. Let's change the world. It's the many versus the money. We're going to win. Let's go, baby.
We're going to win. We're going to take on AIPAC. I'm going to kick some Wall Street ass. So let's go.
Stop the bombs.
Okay, first of all, again, what does that have to do with New York? They're talking about AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is supporting his Democratic opponent. He starts it off, and then, oh my gosh, the whole thing is unhinged. There's a couple clips I want to play for you. So he's talking about, stop, AOC joins this thing. She goes up, I can't play the sound, I wish I could, but it's got some rap song in it, would get a copyright strike. She's up there like dancing and grinding and stuff, not grinding, but dancing and whatever to this rap song. And then she gets so in, I mean, what is this? She gets so into it, she's got her hair up in a bun, and then eventually she like rips the bun out of her hair and is like tossing her hair around. I'm like, and it's just totally inaudible. And I'm like, what is this? It was wild to see. And then it gets crazier than that. So Jamal Bowman takes the stage, and it's again, this is, he's running for re-election. And this is New York State to be a member of Congress. And there's so much of a focus here on anti-Israel animus and anti-Israel sentiment. Anyway, so he's in front of this crowd. There's a lot of black people in the crowd. And I'm going to make a point about why I'm mentioning that on the back end. He goes into this expletive-ridden tirade about everyone who's apparently out to get him and cost him his seat. Here it is.
We are going to show AIPAC the power of the South Bronx. People ask me why I got a foul mouth. What am I supposed to do? You coming after me. You coming after my family. You coming after my children. I'm not supposed to fight back. I'm not supposed to fight back. We're going to show them who the f*** we are. We're going to show them who the f*** we are.
What is wrong with you? So here's what my first thing I thought of that is he's like thinking he has to swear because he's like, I mean, he's black, but that doesn't mean you can't be like racist against black. I really think that he's like, oh, this is the only language that they're going to appreciate and understand is me just with a filthy mouth. Like, no, I bet they care about the issues. I bet they care about some of the things that are happening. I bet they care about their pocketbook and crime and all these things. But you just think that you can stand up there and just drop F-bombs and that's like relating to them somehow? You know, oh, a dance to rap music, that's what's going to get the black vote? F-bombs and rap music and taking my hair out of my ponytail and whipping my hair around, that's what's going to get the black vote. Like, that's what they think of people in the South Bronx. Am I the only one who just inherently that comes across as cringy and offensive to me? Like, no, talk to them about what's happening with their kids' education, with crime, with you know, money and the cost of goods and all these things. Nope, we're going to go after the Jewish people and we're going to dance to rap music and we're going to swear a lot and that'll get them. I don't know how, I would love to hear from someone who's Jewish who plans to vote for Democrats. I would really love to hear from someone who's Jewish who is going to vote for Democrats up and down the ticket. I just want to hear your rationale on that because it genuinely doesn't make any sense to me. And also, if you're black and you plan to vote for Democrats, I really want to hear your rationale because all I hear from them is like the soft bigotry of low expectations. That's all I hear about, oh, woe is you, all these things, you know, the system's holding you down. We're going to swear at you and play rap music and hope that we can appeal to you that way and not treat you like, I don't know, functioning adults who care about the issues. Strange stuff. All right, one more national story for you. There's a debate on Thursday. I am so excited for the first presidential debate of the cycle. Mostly going to see if Joe Biden makes it and what kind of drugs he's hopped up on.
I almost wish we had a show on Friday. Almost.
Careful what you wish for, Nicole. Careful what you wish for. I can make that happen. But I think I'm out of town on Friday, so we might be off the hook on that. So anyway, it's a CNN debate, and it's going to be co-moderated by Jake Tapper and who's the other one? Dana Bash. Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. So anyway, CNN was doing a pre-debate sort of thing where they had a spokesperson for Donald Trump's campaign on who pointed out that those hosts in particular have not been very fair or kind to the former president. And Casey Hunt was not having it at all. Here's the clip.
It takes someone 5 minutes to Google Jake Tapper, Donald Trump, to see that Jake Tapper has consistently frequently likened President Trump to Adolf Hitler.
I'm going to stop this interview if you continue to attack my colleagues. I would like to talk about Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who you work for.
Yes.
If you are here to speak on his behalf, I am willing to have this conversation.
I am stating facts that your colleagues have stated in the past.
Okay,
now,
I'm sorry, guys.
Debate,
we're going to come back out to the panel. Caroline, thank you very much for your time. You are welcome to come back at any point. She is welcome to come back and speak about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump will have equal time to Joe Biden when they both join us now at later this week in Atlanta for this debate.
Wow. She's flustered because she knows the woman has a point. That's why she's flustered. Because Casey Hunt doesn't get flustered easy. She's flustered because she knows that woman has a point, and that's Trump's campaign spokesperson. And this is what's wrong with the media, is the media is incapable of being self-reflective. They're incapable of taking criticism, even when it's very valid criticism. They want to criticize everyone else. They want to judge everyone else from their mountaintop, but they don't want to be judged. And look, you know, the sad part is that I think Dana Bash and Jake Tapper are probably the most unbiased moderators you're going to find within CNN. That's not saying a lot, but, you know, Jake Tapper is one of the more unbiased CNN hosts, but still, there were outlets, New York Post pointed out, let's see, Tapper has called the 45th president a desperate election loser, suggested Trump spread Russian propaganda, said if he was reelected, the former president will try to kill democracy. Quote, he did try to kill democracy once. He's going to try to do it again. They compared him to Hitler. If you were to open a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf, you would find the Nazi leader describing the mixing of non-Germans with Germans as poisoning. Blah, blah, blah. Donald Trump's language mirrors this directly, Tapper said in December of 2023. Bash, who hosts Inside Politics on CNN, has argued that, quote, unfortunately for America, the U.S. Supreme Court decided to keep Trump on the Colorado ballot and suggested the former president incited war domestically during his first term. So that spokesperson for Donald Trump has every right in the world on CNN to raise that as a concern with the debate moderator choice. Now, they also had every right to say, we're not going to participate in a CNN debate. But again, he wants to debate Joe Biden. This is the platform that Joe Biden has agreed to on CNN, probably because he knows that they're biased against Donald Trump. But that is an absolute, first of all, that's a line of, not attack, that's a line of truth that Cassie Hunt should have been well prepared for, don't you think? It's like, hey, they're going to question whether CNN can do this in an unbiased fashion. Instead, you absolutely shut her down when she's saying factually, like, hey, they've compared Donald Trump to Hitler. Cassie Hunt should have let her talk and say, hey, here are the rules for the debate, how we're going to try to keep things fair. That's a very fair point that you made. But no, the media cannot accept any criticism whatsoever. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's one of the reasons that people simply do not trust the media any longer. All right, I'll get to a daily subscriber show poll coming up here in just a moment. But first, Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, they're having another one of their free Know Your Risk webinars coming up this Thursday, the 27th at 3:30 p.m. And this one is specifically going to focus on inflation. So inflation, they call it the silent portfolio killer. And that's because you plan for your retirement, you save the money for the type of retirement that you think that you want. And then inflation hits. And can you really afford some of the things and that you wanted to do in retirement or how you wanted to live in retirement? So again, go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Don't miss Zach's special inflation webinar, June 27th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up completely for free. And they'll just walk you through kind of their plan for dealing with inflation, for making sure that it doesn't absolutely ruin your retirement prospects. And they'll also take you through how they manage risk on retirement portfolios. radios because that's what they specialize in. So knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to questions, comments, and our daily subscriber show poll talking about the debate that is happening on Thursday. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, which topic do you most want Donald Trump and Joe Biden asked about during their first debate this week? That was our daily subscriber show poll. The options I gave you: the border, their age, the economy, or Israel and Hamas. Nicole, what do you think? What do you most want them asked about?
Me personally?
Yes, of course.
Well, I think that the Israel-Hamas thing will actually put them on spot. Like, that will make up some minds.
That could be kind of a wedge issue. Yes. Where if Joe Biden isn't forceful enough, you might have some Democrats who abandon him. And then also I'm curious with Trump, because there's been a hesitancy of some Republicans and some conservatives to be providing military aid to Israel or to Ukraine, et cetera. So, that could be a weak spot for both of them.
Right.
I get that.
So, but what do I mean, well, I guess I care about all of them, but
pick
I
one, Nicole.
The border, the econ. I don't know. That's really hard.
I
want to see what they say with the age thing.
Oh, the age thing for sure. The age thing they have to ask about. There is no way they cannot ask Joe Biden about some of the things that have been happening in his slip-ups, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the economy, I think, affects the most people most readily, but I want the border. I want to know how hard they're going to go at Joe Biden on the border. I'm sure they'll revisit kids in cages or whatever it is, but the border crisis is indicative of a dysfunctional government. So who can go in there and try to deal with a full-blown crisis the best? I mean, the numbers show, and we're going to have this insanity check, the numbers show it was less bad under Trump than Biden. So Biden should be on the defensive on that particular issue. Matthew Cook says, this undivided poll is pretty reflective of the top issue Americans care about and what the Biden administration continues to ignore. Crafty Grandma Crispy, I went with Israel and Hamas because I believe Biden won't be able to articulate on that subject, and I believe he will flip and condemn Netanyahu for defending his people. Yeah, he's going to be a fence walker on that one for sure. Wagon Urkel. The progressives howl about inadequate resources, housing, medical, behavioral health, etc. Then why invite more illegal aliens to an already stressed system? The border must be addressed or we're doomed. And that's such a good point. It's like you want all these social safety nets and stuff. You know that those social safety nets are going to be absolutely taxed, stretched to their limit with the amount of undocumented immigrants coming in. You know that, right? Illegal immigrants, I should say. DOJ Mike. Mike, do you work for the DOJ? Inquiring minds want to know. After 3+ years of Biden telling us there's nothing he can do about it and that his hands were tied by Congress, not to mention all the wonderful things he's accomplished to strengthen border security without saying what he's done, I want Biden roasted. I don't think CNN's going to roast him, but 100% the border is going to come up. And he has not been able to articulate why it's been. I mean, for a while, he refused to call it a crisis. Like him and all his handlers would not call it a crisis. Karine Jean-Pierre is like, it's not a crisis. And then all of a sudden they're like, it's a border crisis and the Republicans won't help us fix it.
Right.
Just
all
insane.
The Republicans' fault. We have a great clip to end the show on today.
Yeah, about that. All right. On Monica Dingra and the fact that she has not changed anything. It's been 4 days. Like, she's caught red-handed. You're lying to voters. Change your bios. Matthew says, if you're willing to lie about your resume, which is easily vettable, then what else will you lie about? Exactly. It's such a dumb lie. It took one email to disprove that she was currently employed there. And I've heard that she's trying to make an excuse for it, but we're still trying to reach her, so we'll follow up, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure she's just waiting to get back to me. She just forgot over the weekend.
Oh, yeah, she's busy.
She started that email.
Yeah, she's busy. I'm sure she'll send us a really nice long email explaining things. Julie, I thought for sure the prosecutor's office was just going to rehire her so she could claim she works for them now. Color me shocked that they're asking her to change her messaging. Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I was also worried. I didn't want her to find out we were poking around about it. And that's why I was taking screen grabs of things. I'm like, she's going to change it. But no, give her 4 days. She hasn't even changed it. Mugshot Espresso. I have to admit, King County Prosecutor's Office under Mannion has been transparent and responsive. I agree. They have a great case of McNorthney, a great public records person or public information officer.
He did get to stick around from the former team. So that's it. That's been a pattern for the prosecutor's office over there.
Tricia Small, thank you for covering this. I'm a former prosecutor and police officer. And you wouldn't go around saying, I'm a prosecutor, I'm a police officer. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if there was a political candidate who used to be a police officer but hadn't been full-time since 2017 saying, I'm a police officer? Media would be all over that.
Oh, absolutely.
Not one old media story, and I call them old media because I like that better than mainstream. We're new media. They're old media, right in the garbage can. Mm-hmm. Not one of them. Unless I missed something, I scoured the internet. Not one of them's talking about how one of the leading candidates to be the next attorney general is just flat lying to people in the voter guide.
It's not the Marine Corps.
on Bob Ferguson's rousing three-minute speech at the Democratic Party convention, CP says, I feel dumber for having listened to that.
Yes. True.
But how many are you going to follow the Cats account, you know? Everybody loves cats.
30 seconds.
Have you gone to look at it?
No, not yet.
It's a pretty cute cat.
I believe you.
It's a pretty cute cat.
I'll just feel bad for the cat.
I'm sure the kids are sweet. I'm sure his 16-year-olds are very sweet and they love the cat and it's an acute account and all that.
Assigned as politics.
Yeah, when you're given 3 minutes to talk about why you should be the governor and you spend the first minute talking about the Instagram account your kids made for your cat... Yeah, something tells me you're trying desperately to sound personable. USPSA, good day all. I was able to collect 10 signatures for my office park neighbors on Initiative 2066. Got them sent to Let's Go Washington. Thank you for bringing that up because we need them in the mail by the end of the week. I say we, it's like the grand we the people. If you have one of those forms that were sent to you, it doesn't matter if you have one signature on there or it's full. You need to send it in, I would say, by Thursday the 27th. Get it postmarked so it can get in, get counted, so they can turn it in. Because the clock is ticking, and it's going to be down to the wire.
And if you find it on Saturday and realize that you need to get it turned in, then there's going to be some drop-off boxes get it in later because it's a holiday week. Don't rely on the mail for the holiday week.
So. Right. So if you go to letsgowa.com, you can also find places to drop it off. If, like Nicole said, mm-hmm. you kind of get down to the end of the week and you're forgetting and all that stuff. And if you haven't signed it, you can also go there to find locations where they're going to have signing events or where they have, you know, some businesses host. We were in Cle Elum over the weekend and at a coffee shop, and they had the initiative there for people to sign. I guilted one of our friends who I think is a Democrat into signing. I was sort of like, said it out loud, so she felt compelled to. But she
was
gets it.
A Democrat.
Yeah, yeah. And then she hung out with us long enough where she's like, that doesn't make sense. Let's see. On the Future 42 pledge to deal with homelessness in a way that makes sense, Lieutenant Dan. Hi, Lieutenant Dan. I feel like I haven't read a comment from you forever. Housing first without a support system to deal with drug or mental health problems is lazy. It's lazy and it's dangerous. It's going to kill people. And it's not going to help anybody. It's absolutely insane. Insane. Speaking of insane, thank you for your questions and comments. Mm. Good as always. Let us get to our closing sanity check on the border, shall we? So I've dogged on the media a little bit in today's episode, so I'll give a little bit of credit to Martha Raddatz, who there's some who do a better job than others, but Pocahontas, aka Elizabeth Warren, was on with Martha and wanted to talk about basically how Joe Biden's the savior at the border and Donald Trump is just terrible. It did not go as Elizabeth Warren expected.
There have been more than 6.9 million apprehensions at the southern border. Thus far, in Biden's term, there were just over 2 million in Donald Trump's entire term. What did the president do wrong?
No, this isn't about what the president did wrong. Remember, on the very first day that he was sworn into office, President Biden asked Congress both for the resources and for comprehensive immigration reform. The Republicans blocked it, blocked it, blocked it, blocked it.
Donald Trump didn't have that either, Senator. And there were 2 million during his entire term.
Until last fall. You know, the president is out there doing everything he can, not just at the border, but overall for families. And the action he took in this last week is exactly Joe Biden being Joe Biden. Think for just a minute about what it means for 500,000 families that little kids go off to school in the morning and they don't have to worry about whether or not mom or dad is still going to be part of their family when they get home.
And what about the border that you were so concerned about a couple of weeks ago? The first question I ask you, are you less concerned now?
No.
Yeah, if Joe Biden is doing, quote, everything he can at the southern border, everything he can do is not good enough. And let's hope that the moderators for Thursday's debate bring those same facts, those same numbers, and that same level of energy to push back against the claims that Joe Biden will make, that this is a problem being worsened by Republicans. That has been your Sanity Check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here to start us off this week. We sure do appreciate you. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Man, we've got some great stories for you coming up this week on the gun control front, on the education front, some good exclusive reporting that you're not going to want to miss. If you would like to become a subscriber to support our show and join our growing community of sane human beings in Washington State and beyond, you can sign up for $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.